You're listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM. The interview continues. And Lynn, what do you think about this? Because you have been working in this community for decades. Have you seen a difference?
Well, I think that young people have always been, have always cared about nature, you know? My grandson, when he was 10, he's over 18 now. We were at an event on Main Island, and he went to a table that were selling no tankers and no pipeline buttons. And he was there volunteering for 2 hours at that table because he said he cared about the animals. He cared about the impact on the animals. And so fast forward to 2019, a wonderful group of young people in Abbotsford, Fridays for the Future, following Greta Thunberg, week after week after week, Friday after Friday after Friday, for over a year, if not almost 2 years, were in front of Abbotsford City Hall. About the issue of their future, the climate of their future. And so I just looked at the stats the local online paper put out about, you know, we're going to have a lot of seniors in the next three decades. But don't forget, those seniors are grandparents of young people. And we care about them. We love them. We want them to have good futures. We want them to have a good climate to flourish in. So I think, you know, between the two groups, hopefully that'll be enough to have the impact needed to move our so-called leaders off of their, you know, lack of action on promises.
And Tim, what do you think about this? Have you seen in your work more young people getting involved?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with the Protect the Planet, Stop TMX, and we're a direct action group. And we do a lot of things, but we sat in the trees in Burnaby for 16 months. And of course, that takes a lot of young blood to keep a movement like that going. Camping in the trees is not for everyone. But as has been said by others here, the young people really care, not to say that older people don't, but the younger people have more on the line and they know it. And they also have the inspiration of figures like Greta Thunberg. So, you know, we did not get too affected by the pandemic because, you know, in a tree, you're pretty physically distanced up there. So no problem in terms of COVID-19. And I'm happy to say that we avoided COVID-19 in our group of, you know, hundreds of people actually gathering in safe ways over the course of the pandemic and keeping the fires under the feet of Trans Mountain. I also just want to point out a couple other things. We have had great success. The Enbridge Northern Gateway project is dead. The KXL pipeline in the United States is dead. Line 3 is on the ropes. Kinder Morgan left because the project was too hot for them, the Trans Mountain Expansion Project. It was too risky. So we've had a lot of success, and we will have success in blocking the Trans Mountain pipeline as well, because it's a project that makes no sense. It's last century's technology, and the world can no longer afford to build new fossil energy infrastructure. And the youth know this.
Hey, Tim, sorry to interject, but can you share what 350.org SFU did and their success at divestment?
Yeah, sure. So what Lynn is referring to there is a divestment campaign that SFU 350 had been working on about 6 years. And one of the youth in Protect the Planet, Stop TMX said, you know, I don't have time for 6 years of work. The university needs to divest today. And he threatened a hunger strike. And this could be the shortest hunger strike in history, because the university administration said, we will divest, the day he started his hunger strike. And they are in the process of full divestment.
From investing in fossil fuel.
Yes, divestment in fossil fuel. Sorry, I thought it was understood.
Wow.
And we need that for UFE. Come on, Ron. You can start a hunger strike. I'll support you.
Actually, as an alumna of UFE, I went to the Alumni Association and put forward a notice of motion that got passed that any of the assets of the alumni be divested from fossil fuel investments. And that was about 3 years ago. Regrettably, it's the university that holds those funds, and they so far have not been convinced to do that.
And my next question would be on, and Ron and I have talked about this for weeks now, the Russian-Ukrainian issue and what role that is now playing in the world needing more oil rather than less. And Ron, I'll start with you once again.
Well, as we've talked about, significant elements of Eastern and Western Europe made a very naive deal with Russia in terms of the oil. And so with the invasion of Russia in Ukraine, you can have diplomatic efforts, you can have certain types of economic boycotts, you can bring in the military. But if Germany and other states need the oil from Russia, they're in this very precarious situation. Now, Germany and some of the other states are through the EU are trying to sort out what they're going to do with Russia in terms of this oil. But it's going to be a very significant transition season, given their excessive dependency on Russian oil and given the aggressive nature of Putin in Russia. And so I think this is certainly a crisis moment.
But Ron, for Europe. Ron, don't you think that perhaps this might spur or somehow speed up the process of transitioning to renewables in Europe? They're already way ahead of us, and it looks to me that there's potential, there's an opportunity. I know the Nord Stream 3 pipe that's just completed is probably never going to be used because of this event, because of this war. And so I'm hoping perhaps there will be they spent billions, and we think our Trans Mountain was an expensive and crazy project. I mean, Russia spent billions on that, and they'll never use it, at least not for oil. But don't you think perhaps there's an opportunity here to see Europe transitioning even faster to renewables?
Oh, absolutely. If they can seize the moment, mm-hmm. if they can realize that going down the path we're doing is a cliff's edge, it's going to lead to tragedy for one and all, as it already is. We're already getting, obviously, the first hint signs and of that, and if they can see this as a much greater opportunity to make the transition, absolutely. Yeah, no, very good point, John. Yeah, I'm on the same page with you on that. It's just whether you have leadership that has the wisdom to see that and act on what they see.
Yeah, and we got a few more minutes before this meeting ends, so can you guys give your final thoughts on where the environmental movement is now headed after COVID-19?
Really glad you brought up COVID-19, because it showed, the pandemic showed what is possible with us in terms of our own resilience. So it showed that we could find trillions and trillions of dollars for a public health emergency. And it means we can also find trillions and trillions of dollars for the climate emergency to prevent it. You know, this is one of those classic examples where prevention is the best medicine. We need to prevent further warming And the way to prevent further warming is to do what the UN General's Secretary General says, which is to stop building new fossil energy infrastructure and to begin the transition and or get serious about the transition. Mm-hmm. And we're on the way to doing that. COVID showed us that we can. I just want to point out one bit of fact that Trans Mountain's cost has exceeded the Nord Stream 2 now by several billion. Trans Mountain pipeline price tag at the moment is still rising, but it's $21.4 billion. So considerably more than Nord Stream. And Trans Mountain will ultimately be canceled. And the real question is, will it be canceled after we waste about 8 to 10 billion more? Or will we wake up and say, okay, pull the plug, let's put this money elsewhere where it can be used to make the transition we need?
Thank you. And John, if you could quickly wrap your final thoughts.
Sure. Well, right now, of course, the pipeline, the Trans Mountain pipeline is being installed through the city of Abbotsford. And I have to drive past several roadblocks anytime I want to leave the mountain and head for town. But I think optimism and courage are not answers. They don't fix things by themselves, but activism does. And so I'm of the opinion that the only thing that will work at this point, however difficult it is activism. Very much like like our friend Tim and Lynn and others have, and of course Ron as well, have shown that sometimes activism is necessary, and now is the time.
Mm-hmm. And Lynn, if you can, thank you. And if you can wrap up your final thoughts. And
yeah, I'm just sort of going to go on the flip side of the coin from what Tim said. I think that COVID is such an example of what happens when you're not prepared and you refuse to pay attention to what's happening out there. Like Canada, it backed off of its pandemic preparedness. And I think that it is nowhere near where it needs to be when it comes to the climate emergency. We are not prepared. And, last summer, with the heat dome, with the wildfires, with the flooding, it just showed how ill-prepared we are. And I keep on telling these supposed leaders, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We really, really, really need to be transitioning off of fossil fuels and onto sustainable, renewable energy. That's where we need to be spending our efforts and our money.
Thank you. And Ron, if you can quickly wrap it up.
Well, I think in terms of Canadian history, one perhaps historic point is pertinent for what we're facing is that coming into the 20th century, the Canadian government refused to invest in meaningful social services. But when the wars broke out, the government would put all sorts of money into the military for war. And after World War II, Stephen Leacock, one of our great political economists in Canada, argued, if you're willing to put all that money into the military via the state, why can you not put all that money into the social services for people in terms of education, healthcare, and a variety of things? Now, we could ask the same question today. Why can't the government, along with activist groups, non-government groups, intergovernment groups, government-assisted groups, protest groups, why can't the government direct its funding towards environmental issues in the same way they once did in social service industries and have built in Canada to an imperfect degree, a much better healthcare approach than, say, across the border? And so much hinges on priorities. There certainly is the funding to do so, if there is the priorities. And so I think we have made transitions in the past from the government getting involved in the whole social network and funding it from coast to coast. Why can't that money be directed now, given our obvious situation and some of the obvious symptoms we're facing, money being funded more and more into environmental issues? And I think that's possible And we've seen how that has been done in the past on social issues. So there's the funding and the ability to do, though, that you just need states and non-government groups working together in an organic way for the greater good of the situation. That's going to be the challenge in the future.
Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. And it was so fun. Thank you. I think our listeners have learned so much. Thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedules.
Oh, thank you, Surjit.
Thanks again. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Eye on the Valley right here on CIVL 101.7 FM. Join me again next week as I have another great episode for you.